Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Episode 239 for the love of the game on the Believe Podcast Network is brought to you by Bet Online. The NFL playoffs are here, folks. Divisional round is here, but not just NFL playoffs. We've got NBA season in full swing, NHL season in full swing, Australian Open's going on, and Bet Online has you covered with up to the seconds odds, news, and scores. With additional odds, lines, trends, and info on both desktop and mobile, you can access the world's best wagering information anytime. Head to the website today, get in on the action. Remember to use promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, to get a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Again, that's promo code B-L-E-A-V. Bet Online, where the game starts. With that said, episode 239 for the love of the game. Let's get this work.
So many lessons, how not to mess with broken hearts. So many questions, when this began we was the perfect match. Perhaps we had some problems but we working at it. And now the arguments are getting loud. I wanna stay, but I can't help from walking out. Let's throw it away, just take my hand and understand. If you could see, I never planned to be a man. It just wasn't me.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. Episode 239 for the love of the game on the Believe Podcast Network. It's yours truly, it's ATH. We are back behind the mic, back in the saddle, coming to you on a Wednesday afternoon and looking forward to this weekend of NFL games. Obviously, we had wild card weekend this past weekend. A lot of the games were not super competitive. They were compelling, but not super competitive. The only really, really great game of the weekend was Sunday night, the late game, Lions and the Rams. 24-23 Lions, just an awesome, awesome game. Good for Jared Goff. Good for the Lions. This is their first playoff win since 1991. Incredible. But I want to just recap. I know it's Wednesday, but I want to recap NFL wildcard weekend so we can take you into this coming weekend in the NFL, a little second round. So we'll go through the games really quickly. Texans-Browns, this one was a laugher. By the way, just for the record, I want it to be known that this weekend was a very profitable weekend for yours truly. I know no one really cares about your bets, but in the picks I gave out, I went 5-1 against the spread. Heads up with my buddy Shy. I demolished him this weekend, but here we go. So just a quick recap of what was wild card weekend. Texans 45, Browns 14. I mean, CJ Stroud was incredible. I know the Browns had a great defense, but that defense was a lot worse on the road statistically this year than was at home. And the Texans at home, being a home underdog behind a rookie quarterback and a rookie coach, absolutely spanked the Browns. Absolutely spanked the Browns. I mean, this one wasn't close at all. Joe Flacco was a great story, but he could not compete in this game, especially the way CJ Stroud was slinging the ball all over the place. Really, really impressive season for the Texans. Continues as they take on the Ravens this coming Saturday. Chiefs 26, Dolphins 7. This game was absolutely freezing cold. The videos coming out of Arrowhead Stadium were ridiculous, where a refrigerator was keeping bottles of water from freezing. You take them out of the refrigerator and the water in the water bottles froze. That's how cold it was, and it looked like the Miami Dolphins had no interest in playing this game. For the Dolphins, it's a really bitter end to what was a promising season. I know they were ravaged by injury. It just looked bad. It looked bad, and there are going to be big questions about Tua Tagovailoa going forward. Obviously, they picked up the option, so they don't really have to make a decision right now. You'll see how it goes. I mean, on the surface, Tua looks really, really good. I mean, he led the league in passing, was a Pro Bowler for the first time, had a really, really good season. But not being able to play in temperatures below 40 degrees is a problem, especially if you're not going to have home field in the playoffs, if you're the Miami Dolphins. And you wonder what it's going to take contract-wise going forward with Tua and the Dolphins to get a deal done to keep him there. And if the Dolphins want to pay the full boat to keep him there, if he's one of those upper echelon guys. Now, listen, I'm a Tua Tagovailoa defender. I think he's really good. Do I think he's Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow level good? No, I don't. I think there are only three of those guys in the entire league. So those contract discussions will be interesting. I mean, the fact of the matter is the Dolphins were ravaged by injury. Starting defensive ends out. Jalen Waddle banged up. Tyreek Hill was banged up. Xavien Howard banged up. Just the offensive line was banged up. I mean, it's just a lot to overcome. A lot to overcome. Very bitter pill to swallow if you're the Miami Dolphins. And if you're the Kansas City Chiefs, like, things are just breaking right for you right now. And for everybody who says they're going to flip the switch, they've got Patrick Mahomes, they've got a good defense, they'll figure it out. This kind of reminds you of the Patriots in 2019 when they didn't necessarily have great weapons on the outside, but they had the quarterback, they had the infrastructure, and they were able to go on a run. Well, you potentially are seeing that here with the Kansas City Chiefs. Packers 48, Cowboys 32. This was an absolute laugher, and it wasn't even that close. I mean, the Cowboys were absolutely embarrassed and emasculated on national television. It was beautiful. It was absolutely beautiful. And I know what the box score says, but Dak Prescott stunk in this game. Stunk. I know it's going to say he had 403 yards passing, three TDs, two interceptions. I mean, 85% of his stats came in garbage time. This game was over in the second quarter, and it was beautiful to watch. Jordan Love having himself a coming out party. I was on the Packers, plus 7.5. It was gorgeous. Moving on, Lions 24, Rams 23. Just awesome win by the Lions. This game was really fun to watch. Both teams deserve to be in the next round. Like, I'd rather see them than the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but we'll get to them in a second. But kudos to the Lions. And anybody who was hating on Dan Campbell, you have to eat your words, especially that jackass Jamil Hill, that race-baiting jackass Jamil Hill, who basically said that Dan Campbell, when he was hired, was only hired because of the color of his skin. Well, she can kick rocks because she's the worst. But anyway, just so good for the Lions. So good for the Lions. I mean, this is a tortured fan base. A tortured fan base. So for the city of Detroit, for the team, it's just awesome. I'm riding high with the Lions. I've loved the Lions all year. I'm a Jared Goff defender. Sweet revenge from him against his old team. Was super impressed by the Rams, by the way, in this game also. But the difference in this game came down to red zone execution. Lions executed in the red zone. The Rams could not. Bend but don't break defense from the Lions. And the Lions advance and are hosting a second playoff game, which they haven't done in who knows how long. Bills 31, Steelers 17. This game wasn't really that close. And then all of a sudden it started getting close. You never really thought that the Bills were in trouble of giving up the lead, but they were kind of like playing around, messing around a little bit in the middle of that game, but they shut the door on the Steelers. Josh Allen, I mean, is sensational, is absolutely sensational. He's going to get much maligned for the turnovers, and I get it. Some of them are bad, but whatever. He puts this team on his back. He makes plays that no one else, besides for maybe Patrick Mahomes, can make. He's just an incredible quarterback that's worth every penny. He's one of those guys. And last but not least, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 32, Eagles, 9. The Eagles started out 10-1. They finished 11-6 and got demolished in the first round of the playoffs. I mean, if Dallas wasn't the biggest disappointment, the Eagles were, because they were not competitive in this game. Just not competitive. And I said it about Jalen Hurts, that he's just the guy, and I believe it wholeheartedly. And that contract is going to kick in soon, that monster extension he signed, and the great infrastructure that he had. And again, some of it was banged up. A.J. Brown didn't play. Now you're seeing Jason Kelsey, the star center's retiring. But that great infrastructure that propped up Jalen Hurts last year to go to the Super Bowl, to be an MVP candidate. Well, it's not going to be the same, and they're going to be saddled with maybe the worst contract in football, unless Dak Prescott signs a monster extension, and that will be the worst contract in pro football. As for the Buccaneers, you got to be happy for Baker Mayfield. Guy has been discarded. Guy has been thrown around. And a team that you thought was going to finish last place in the division ends up winning the division for the fourth straight year, and Baker Mayfield wins a playoff game. Pretty good revenge for Baker Mayfield. You'd think that the Browns would love to have themselves some Baker Mayfield right now in their locker room. So looking ahead to the second round, the divisional round, got some nice matchups. We've got the 49ers and the Green Bay Packers. That's the late game Saturday. The early game is Texans and Ravens. The opening line is Ravens -9.5. If I had to lean, I would lean the Texans to cover the number. I just think it's a lot of points, and I just trust CJ Stroud more than I probably should, even though he's a rookie QB. I just trust him, and I'm just not sold on the Ravens in the playoffs because of their past playoff performance. Packers, 49ers. 49ers are favored by 10 at home. I like the Packers to cover. I think the Niners are going to win. I like the Packers to cover the number, though. Jordan Love is on fire. Lions, Buccaneers, Lions at home. The spread's -6 for the Detroit Lions. I like the Lions in this one. I know Tampa's a great story. I know Baker had a great game last week. I just think the time's running out on the Buccaneers, and the Lions are riding the high of last week. And then, last but not least, the most interesting game of the weekend, Bills, Chiefs. It's a super exciting game. I'm very excited to watch this game. Bills right now are favored by 3. I know I picked the Bills to go to the Super Bowl, but I kind of like the Chiefs +3 if I'm leaning one way, just because the Bills are a little tortured and have been a little Jekyll and Hyde for me. But then again, so have the Chiefs. But I'm gonna say Chiefs +3 in that game. I do think the Bills are going to win, but I'm going to take the points here. So again, to recap, Texans +9.5, Packers +10, Lions -6, Chiefs +3. Those are my picks for the divisional round against the spread. A couple of NBA things. I waited till Wednesday to talk about last night's NBA slate. There are only 3 games, all Western Conference games, but they were very, very entertaining. It would be awesome if the NBA could schedule some of these games that aren't second nights of a back-to-back. I know Joel Embiid against Nikola Jokic, both teams played on a back-to-back. It'd be nice if that weren't the case. I mean, both guys played hard. Both guys played well. Embiid was fantastic. Jokic was very good himself. 76ers took care of business. But it would just be nice. I know with the in-season tournament, it's hard to schedule these games, but just saying it'd be nice. But the big takeaway for me lately, based on last night's game, obviously the Phoenix Suns had a monster comeback against the Sacramento Kings, but it's the Clippers. The Clippers have been fantastic lately. I know they started out 0-5 with James Harden, but since then they've been on a roll. They're 8-2 in their last 10. They've creeped up to all the way to fourth in the standings. They are absolutely rolling. Kawhi has been awesome and has been largely healthy. Paul George was sensational last night against the Oklahoma City Thunder. And James Harden's doing his thing. Now, again, They're in the honeymoon phase with James Harden. We've seen this before. So am I taking the Clippers seriously as a playoff contender? No, not just yet, because I don't want to be in the Harden business. That's just my steadfast rule until he proves it otherwise. But right now, the Clippers are on a roll. And one last thing before we get into our guests for this week's show. Pascal Siakam, forward for the Toronto Raptors, two-time All-Star, borderline All-NBA guy, was traded today to the Indiana Pacers for Bruce Brown and three first-round picks. Jordan Nwora was in the deal, and they also get Kyra Lewis, guard from the New Orleans Pelicans, for a second-round pick and second trade. I just don't understand this trade for the Indiana Pacers. Siakam is a pending agent and wants to test free agency. Now, I know the way the league generally works is that these deals don't get done unless you kind of have an agreement that the player is going to re-sign in free agency, see OG Anunoby with the New York Knicks. But three first-round picks for a guy who wants to test free agency, if you're Indiana, like, I'm just not sure what the rush was. And, like, does Pascal Siakam make them that much better right now? He's a nice player, but I'm not sure he changes the, you know, the outlook for them this year. I mean, they're going to be a playoff team. They'll probably be a top six seed, but that's not guaranteed. Like, are they guaranteed to get to the second round? No, I just don't think with what they gave up for the level of player that Siakam is, for the contract that he's going to want, by the way, which there's no way I would pay it if I was a GM. I just don't know why the Pacers did this. But we're in trade season in the NBA. We played 41 games. Can't believe we're at the halfway mark. NBA season has been fun so far. But those are just a couple of quick thoughts on the NBA. We'll be doing a little bit more NBA next week with a recurring guest, hopefully. With that said, we're going to bring on a recurring guest to talk about his Dallas Cowboys and the debacle that was last week and a couple other topics. And we may get a second guest to talk about his greatest victories being a sportsman and get to them in just a matter of moments. So I have the pleasure of welcoming back a recurring guest. This guy wears many hats. He hasn't been on in a while, but this guy wears many hats. We talk Celtics from time to time. We talk the state of Major League Baseball from time to time. He also serves as the commissioner of my fantasy football league that I get roped into every year just to feel bad about myself. But again, no one cares about your fantasy team. But I had to bring him on because he is a major Dallas Cowboys fan. And I kind of wanted to laugh at him considering I'm a Giants fan. None other than Phil Bask. Phil, what's good, buddy? How are you doing?
Good. You forgot to mention that I've won that league.
Was it two years in a row?
Yeah, I mean, it's the first time ever. So in about 20, in like 18 years, I'll take two while we're all adults. But I'm happy to be back. I'm not happy why I'm here, but I'm happy to be back.
All right. So because I kind of want to gloat a little bit, but I also know, considering the state of the Cowboys, this is probably going to be a therapy session for you. So I guess we start here. What was your optimism for this season, given the way it played out? How are you feeling going into Sunday's game? And where are you at right now, just emotionally?
So just in general, the terms of the season, I kind of had similar expectations to last year, just like make the playoffs. I didn't think they were in the division, but it doesn't really matter. Make the playoffs, win your first round game, and then probably lose to whoever they play in the second round, and then definitely lose to the Niners, or would have maybe thought the Eagles at the beginning of the year. So going into Sunday, I wasn't as optimistic as one maybe your average Cowboys fan, just because the defense has been getting worse and worse against any like relevant offense. So I wasn't kind of looking forward to that. And the Packers, I've watched way too many Packers games the last 8 weeks, and they've played well. But I still expected the Cowboys to kind of come out, especially them being on defense first, trying to like make a statement, get a big stop, hit Jordan Love. And there was just 5 minutes of the easiest offense I've seen a team have all year. And you kind of knew things weren't going to go well, but just based on kind of how easy the Packers were controlling the line of scrimmage. So once the first drive happened, I got a pit in my stomach, and I thought, oh no. And I'm on text threads with other Cowboys fans, including recurring guest Moshe Cook. And we are just it's only, and then after the second touchdown, it's only like, are they going to get blown out? Oh my God, they're going to get blown out. And it's still early, but the body language, the play calling was kind of as bad as you would expect it to be. Sometimes they can overcome that. Dak, I've defended Dak a lot, but he didn't look poised in that first quarter or second quarter. And once you saw that, it really, once you saw the defense wasn't going to stop them or slow them down, it was over. It was over quicker than I ever thought it would be, which is really pathetic because the Cowboys, at least offensively, are the best offense in football. They struggled a bit with the Lions, but they came back against the Commanders and tore them apart. And you think they'll at least, you know, match them score for score. And also they couldn't figure, they didn't figure out. It's amazing, Tobin Hess. It's, we watch stuff, we read articles. You can know what is the weakness of a Packers defense just from watching a couple of their games on national television and reading a handful of articles about them. Middle of the defense, secondary is bad. And the Cowboys just seemed uninterested in going towards the middle of the field. And Michael Gallup had, like, basically you guarding him. And there was just, seemed to be a poor game plan, which isn't surprising, but you kind of forget. You forget every year that Mike McCarthy is a bozo, and that when you get to the playoff game, you're like, oh, right, they will regret. They'll play it way too safe on both sides, and they're just not going to ever win a close game with him as a big close game or a big game at all with him as their head coach. And that's how I feel today. Is like I'm just waiting for the Schefter tweet to be like, Dallas has fired Mike McCarthy, and every day it goes on and I don't get that notification. I get a little nervous. So today's what, Tuesday? So
today's Tuesday evening. No notification they're interviewing Bill Belichick.
No, it's been a long week, put it that way. And it felt a little better seeing the Eagles kind of get trounced, but it doesn't. I didn't really care about that.
We'll get to them in a second. So I just want to focus on the Cowboys and the psyche of Cowboys fans, right? The Cowboys have not won a Super Bowl since 1995.
Yeah.
They have not made an NFC title game since 1996. It's largely been a lot of hype and not a lot of results. They've won 12 games the last 3 years. They have yet to make a conference finals appearance. Like, where do you go from here? Like, I'm just curious because most normal run franchises would have made a change by now, either quarterback or coach or both. But the Cowboys seem to be in this malaise where even though the regular season numbers are what they are, the status quo stays. And considering Dak Prescott's contract situation, what, he's got 1 year left?
Yeah.
At a big cap number, like what do you do?
Well, I saw a tweet in the haze of Sunday to today saying that millennial Cowboys fans like myself we've had it the worst because I can barely remember them being the Steelers to win the Super Bowl. Like I have an inkling, a memory of it, but I didn't enjoy it. I was 7 or 9, however old I was. I didn't really know what's going on. And they've been perfectly mediocre really since they last got to a conference title game. So I've only really known the average to slightly above average team that would go 9-7 a bunch and then lose in the playoffs or miss the playoffs at 8-8. About 10 years of Jason Garrett was essentially a waste of anyone's time. like I think about it now and all the time spent watching those games, kind of knowing the outcome. There were a couple, you know, variants with Romo and then being a little better in the regular season, sometimes dominant, but the playoffs always ended up the same. And the Joneses, I know nothing about them. I can't speak to the feeling of every Cowboys fan, but they seem content with not being the focus of the blame game. So I think, in the years of like Dave Campo, Chan Gailey, post Parcells, it's like, who are they hiring? Who are these guys who shouldn't be coaching, the head coaches in the NFL? Wade Phillips was pretty bad for them. He had some good moments, but they fired him in the middle of the season. And I think this Jones scrutiny was pretty high because not only were they dictating personnel, they were also he was on the field the second half of games. Like even if he wasn't doing anything, like if your boss comes over to you, like while you're, you know, finishing out a report or something, and they're just looking over your shoulder, it's not going to make, doesn't make you feel good.
Right.
So now with McCarthy, it's like, if they lose, it's McCarthy's fault, or maybe it's Dak's fault. Like, it'll mainly go on McCarthy. And this year, there'll be a lot of Dan Quinn chatter just because of the possibility from leaving, which I'd be more than happy to see happen. But in terms of where you go from here, I mean, this is a pivotal moment in the franchise. There are a lot of free agents. They'll probably extend Dak, and I'm not against it as much as I have my reservations about Dak. It'll lower the cap number, and there's no one out there. Like, I don't know what his value is, but no one's offering trades for him right now that we know of, and there's no one out there who will be better than he is. You know, he's still a very skilled quarterback, and he has won a couple of big regular season games earlier in his career, no less. But I think you just fire McCarthy, let Quinn leave, and you got to get somebody in there who's gonna kind of hold people accountable. Like a lot of the post game chatter was Dak saying how he has McCarthy's back. Great. I'm sure he's saying that because his expectation is maybe McCarthy will be back, or it's just a good public persona. But like, clearly there was something wrong with their game plan. I don't think it was just an execution issue. So I'd like to see them bring in someone who's either a pretty creative offensive play caller. They had Kellen Moore. I liked him, but I guess he's probably not coming back. And then you'll see kind of who becomes available. And I'm definitely not against something like a Belichick or Carroll or kind of a more variable to come in and really kind of own the defense while hiring paying a nice penny for a very good play caller. I think that's their best case scenario. But like from a talent standpoint, they need linebackers and they need a little bit of offensive line help, but that's it. They and a nose tackle. They can really use a tackle who defends the run well. And looks like their pick last year in the first round's Mousy Smith character is okay, but he's probably a rotational guy at best. So this is just stuff they don't do. They don't spend in free agency like a little extra money on a more talented three technique lineman or they really trust their drafting process, and they kind of sacrifice that for depth. And they have a lot to do this offseason. They got to, possibly, like you said, sign Dak to an extension. They probably want to extend Lamb and Parsons. Tyron Smith's a free agent. The idea was that one day Tyler Smith, that guard, would eventually move there, but I don't know if that's the plan. And they've got some good backup guards in interior linemen, but Biadasz, the center, is a free agent. My guess is they'll keep a lot of the same team. My biggest fear is they're going to keep the team, and they're going to bring McCarthy back. And next year, in January 2025, we'll be doing the same appearance on the podcast again.
So the Dak thing is interesting, right? Because the regular season stats were great. I mean, he was top three in basically every single statistical category this year. But the playoff record stinks. And I understand that quarterbacks command a tremendous amount of money, a tremendous percentage of the salary cap. But like, is Dak, would you be comfortable moving on from Dak considering what he may cost, and you have other positions that you want to resign? Like, what do you pay him top dollar? Because if I'm his agent, like, there's no way I'm taking less than top dollar, but I just don't think you can pay a guy who's good but not great that large percentage of a salary cap, especially in a hard cap sport. So I mean, if you had to pay him sort of like in NBA terms, like the max, or you let him walk, like which would you choose?
I mean, you got to pay
him. He's got 1 year left. So, I mean, it's not really like an issue this offseason, but you don't want him like a lame duck going into next season.
It is an issue because they have a lot of extending him would lower that cap number, which will help them out immensely. They kind of have to do it this offseason. I believe there's a reason they can't franchise tag him, nor would you want to kind of live in that world of like tagging your quarterback every year or something. That's never a great scenario. But I think what's the alternative? Tell, like, if you're thinking about it right now, they said we're not going to extend Dak, then what do they do? Let me hear the Giants fan. You already extended Daniel Jones, so you're kind of screwed anyway. But let's say this Daniel Jones scenario coming off last year again. You were kind of in a similar scenario, right? A little bit of a better track record for Dak, but still, like, similar spots, no?
Well, the Jones contract, I mean, they get out of it after this year, right? But yeah, no, it's the same thing. Like, that number for a guy who's not very good, like, it's maddening.
Right, but say, what, like, do they
it's
do?
It's not worth it. At that point, you just keep drafting guys until you hit something.
But they don't, they're drafting late first round, and they have other needs. They could, like, what are they going to take? JJ McCarthy? Like, that's not going to help them out. I think you just re-sign them and you bring back, you know, key players, but you kind of have to spend money on the margins, which is something they hopefully will do. They draft very well every year, mostly. My guess is they'll get at least one starting lineman of the draft this year, and they have a couple guys who got hurt before the season who they drafted who will be impact players next year, hopefully. But you never really know. They need linebacker help because Vander Esch's career is probably over. And if it's not, I don't know how, like, you want him on the field for you. And then you get Diggs back. Hopefully that helps a little bit in the secondary. The safety play against the run was really bad, so they're going to have to go bigger there. Like, they have things they just need to tweak. They really just got to tweak some stuff in terms of the personnel, but, like, the overall strategy, they got to figure. They got to. It's crazy. Like, they get paid millions of dollars, these coaches. One of the things I said during the game when they were down 20-0, I was like, I can argue that you couldn't get, like, a team of, I can get 10 dogs and cats and have them prepare for the Packers-Cowboys game, and it wouldn't be any worse at that point in the game at 20-0. Like, the dogs and cats are going to do worse than McCarthy and his staff. Like, that's absurd. Like, it was as bad as it could have been. And Mike McCarthy walks, I just don't know what they're watching. I don't know. Maybe they're looking for something or see something we don't, as, like, a casual, not more than a casual NFL fan, but a pretty knowledgeable NFL fan who just knows, like, just, are you, have they watched Packers games? Like, I don't know. Of course they have. And I think it's kind of funny also that LaFleur replaced McCarthy in Green Bay and also hopefully got him fired with this game too. So I'm sure Matt LaFleur's proud of that. I'm sure he's thinking about it all the time.
So you don't think that Dak is part of the core problem?
I don't. I think he's good enough to at least be a relevant playoff team, like a top, you know, in the discussion to get to the conference title game, and things have to kind of break his way for them to win a Super Bowl. I mean, worst quarterbacks have won Super Bowls. It's just a matter of kind of just game plan. They haven't been a good game plan team in so long. And you look at their playoff game specifically, I mean, the Bucs stunk last year, so that was kind of an issue. They played a Rams team in the second round a couple of years ago where you knew that they were just going to run the ball all game, and Dallas did nothing to try to stop them. And this isn't like – it was like, you know, Darrell Henderson. I don't even know. It was a good running team, but, like, at the same time, they got beat up and, like, no adjustments were made. They lucked out against the Lions. This is like a decade ago almost with the non-pass interference call. And they scraped by then, and then they Tony Pollard goes down last year in their game against the Niners, but they didn't. They still tried to kind of work the running back with Zeke, and, like, Zeke didn't have it. Like, you just got to drop back and throw it, and it's infuriating. They just seem to game plan terribly for every important game. So I think Dak. Do I want Dak back? If I have my pick of almost any quarterback near his tier, like a Cousins or something like that, I'd probably rather have Cousins. But here we are, and Dak will get his money, and I'm sure there'll be some kind of out after some years. Because also, let's say he does play really well for 2 or 3 years, he's 30, you know, and he could probably opt out and get a bigger contract, whether it's with Dallas or someone else if he has good. He can be a top 7 regular season quarterback for the next 3 years, and he'll get paid more than he will in this extension. So,
yeah, but I don't know. If you look around the league, like, where's his landing spots? And I know the quarterback, you know, play in the NFL right now is, like, at an all-time low. So maybe I have to go back and, like, look at it. But, like, either teams have young guys that they're still hopeful for, or they're going to be drafting guys. Like, I'm not sure where Dak goes on the open market.
I mean, a team, and it's funny, I think of this now, it just comes to my head, but like, if you're the New York Jets and you get another year of Rodgers, and let's say they're not going to be the worst team in the league, so they're not drafting a quarterback for a minimum of 2 years. I mean, and they're still going to have their defensive players are in their 20s. Garrett Wilson's young. Like, that's not, they're going to be options that kind of come out of the woodwork. And if people know, if the rumors inside the NFL that, Dallas is going to sign Dak, but he's going to opt out, or they're going to opt out after year three, and we don't have a real, we they're like, the Jets are kind of the perfect example, right? Because they don't really have a future plan of quarterback post Rodgers. They don't have a plan next year if Rodgers goes down. Like, who knows what they'll even do? They're not going to draft someone in the first two or three rounds this year. They're going to piece their team together, and then you got to find guys like a Jake Browning whenever he's a free agent, or if teams will try to trade for him, like, what's his value going to be? And he can take a spot that would be for Dak. You know, it's, there are definitely teams that are kind of sitting in similar situations where you're the Saints, your defense is young, is pretty good. You have good young offensive pieces. You're 2 years, a car's gone. Who's their quarterback? You know, there are a couple teams out there, but do I want to pay Dak all that money if I'm a team, kind of a mid-league team, thinking he'll put us over the top? Probably not, but someone will do it. Someone always does it.
It's usually the own team. Yeah.
I've
been workshopping, like, this theory about the quarterback market and how the owners and the general managers have sort of, like, let it go where it's gotten crazy, where it's almost like they overvalue these guys in free agency. And like, how many guys are worth the contracts that they're getting? So I think it's like maybe three or four, maybe. So, I mean, eventually, like, it's going to for all teams, like, it's going to have to reset itself where they're going to value, you know, the guy, the other pieces besides for just the quarterback, like Justin Herbert, like, as talented as he is, he's not worth that amount of, you know, percentage of the salary cap. I just don't believe it.
Yeah. It's a tough spot to be in. Cause when you find the right guy, when you have a Mahomes, Allen, Lamar, like, you're going to be competitive no matter what, even if they take up the largest chunk of the salary cap. Look at the Chiefs this year. Their defense is great, and their offense is kind of meh, like, especially for them. Like, and I still think they'd be my pick to kind of, I mean, I think whoever wins that game with Buffalo will win the Super Bowl, but like, they're in it this year with really not too much on offense going for them. You hope, like, if you're the Chargers, you're hoping Herbert takes, you know, all the analytics say he's a great passer, great decision maker, and he has pretty decent weapons when they're healthy. They just never stay healthy. So your hope is that he makes a leap in a certain year where he becomes in that kind of top tier of quarterback. But before you do that, you have to pay him. Otherwise, if you're the Chargers and you saw him do it elsewhere, you'd feel like idiots, right? You'd feel like, we'd be like, we had this guy at age 26 and we let him go because he wasn't performing as to the level that we could. And all of a sudden he's leading, you know, another team to a conference championship game. And you're like,
I think it's on all the general managers now and all the owners to almost drive the price down, like, collectively, because there's only one Patrick Mahomes. Running backs. What?
Like, for running backs, you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And spread the wealth out. But, you know, another team that had a very disappointing weekend and a disappointing last month and a half, 2 months of the season is the Philadelphia Eagles, who are about to enter their own version of hell with the Jalen Hurts contract, right? You know, Jalen Hurts, and I've been saying it when people talking about that he was an MVP candidate. I was like, the guy's average. He had one above average year. Like, he's kind of like Cam Newton, where Cam Newton had that one crazy year. They go 15-1. And after that, he was like largely average for the rest of his career. And Jalen Hurts got a monster extension, and that's going to cripple the Eagles. Now, as a Giants fan, that's awesome because I don't like the Eagles. I'm sure you don't like the Eagles as well. So I can't wait for that catastrophe to watch itself unfold. But let me ask you this. Of the two, the Cowboys and the Eagles. Now try and remove your own personal biases, you know, in this. But like, who had the more embarrassing weekend?
That's a tough one. I mean, I think you have to separate it into. I don't think you can give one encompassing answer for it, because football wise, it's the Cowboys. The Cowboys are better than the Packers, and they were embarrassed at home. That game was, that's about as bad and one side of a playoff game you'll ever see. The only one I could think of is when the Giants, I think, beat the Vikings like 42-0 when we were kids?
41-0, yeah, to go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, like that's the only, like, I'm sure there are others, but that one will stick with me forever. This one will stick with me forever because it was just such a shellacking by the Packers. But the media has been kind to Dallas overall. Like, it seems like they have a pretty stable locker room situation. The Eagles come out, I think, in terms of also they have just as many free agents as the Cowboys, and they come out looking like a house divided. And when your star receiver, you know, complains about your star quarterback, and it's very clear that a lot of there's a split. Like, I don't know if it's everyone against Jalen Hurts or if it's, you know, who has his back, et cetera. But when that stuff starts to get out, it usually means people will lose their jobs, and you also lose the fans. Like Hurts will stay because they signed the extension. You'll see if they keep the same roster, they try to make it work. They hire a new coach. They keep Sirianni. Because they have a ton of young talent. Like, they're losing Kelsey, their offensive line. They'll probably have to adjust their game plan from what it was last year or two. But the Cowboys, on terms of football, that was just pathetic. I mean, everyone, every NFL fan who's not a Cowboys fan must have thoroughly enjoyed watching that game. And
I mean, I did. I was on the Packers +7.5, and I had a Tampa Packers money line parlay. Not that anybody cares about my bets, but
no, but your average football fan is going to be like, this is great. Like, this is Dallas is out. This is like, you knew they're going to be out, but they're out in embarrassing fashion. The Eagles at least got to the Super Bowl last year, and they weren't far. There may be one questionable holding call away from not winning it. I think in the long term, this Philly has hurt more this weekend because of what will come out of this fractured team. But if I'm just sitting here today on a Tuesday, as a Cowboy fan, I'm just thinking, man, Dallas just blew it. Like, most people probably teased the Cowboys to win, and they thought, like, that's the game I don't have to worry about. You know, I can't, I'm sure TV, you know, NFL execs were like, oh, we'll get Cowboys Packers ratings, then we'll get great Lions Cowboys ratings. Now look at Lions Bucks, which will not be as good. And they're worried, they'll worry about that. They tell you they won't, but they are certainly not thrilled that the Cowboys won't be in the next round of the playoffs. Yeah, I say the Cowboys. That's embarrassing. Imagine the Knicks losing like a Game 4 or a Game 7 at home to not Miami, they're too good, but like a Pacers team just like losing it 140-98 at the Garden. Like, that's what I would make it. That's what it would feel like to me.
Especially considering the Knicks are like the Cowboys, where they haven't, you know, been at the summit in a long time. Overall thoughts on the NFL playoffs. What's kind of stood out to you from opening weekend? What are you looking forward to next weekend?
Yeah, I mean, what stood out to me is I was impressed watching the Kansas City game. Just like, there's times where people would, when we were younger, would people would rag on Andy Reid, but he really has a very firm grasp of this Chiefs offense. You know, they let Bieniemy go. And while they're not as good as they have been, it's also a talent situation, right? So, like, Miami's not great, but they really just manhandle them. And if I'm Buffalo, I'm thinking, like, I got to prepare. Like, I'm playing the Chiefs we played last year. Like, we can't, no messing around. We can't turn the ball over. We have to protect Allen because the Chiefs front four has been tremendous. So I'm impressed.
Hold on one second. Are you buying the Chiefs in terms of that, you know, the flip is switched? I know Mahomes has no receivers. They're awful, but it's kind of like a Tom Brady year, like in 2019, limited weapons, but you know, you still don't want to bet against the guy. Is that the feeling that you're getting? Because everybody's been loving up the Bills.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with the Bills is they play a lot of, you know, they make mistakes, whether it's fumbling or turning the ball over. They're kind of susceptible to the big play on the back end, but, you know, the Steelers aren't going to. There's some flashes of it this weekend, but, yeah, if I'm the Bills, I'm thinking we can't turn the ball over at all. We can't give Kansas City's offense a short field whatsoever. And, like, we have to score 30 points. Like, that's how we have to think. We have to score 21 to 30 points to think we're going to beat them. And, like, it's really just a matter of, like, until, like, you said, it's kind of similar to Brady. I think they're actually a little more talented than some of those Patriots teams. But if you don't play mistake-free football, they're going to beat you. Like, you just have to play not a perfect game. But you have to play you have to bring your A-minus game. And that is kind of like, they kind of flipped the switch the last few weeks, and Kelce looked better last week. And if he can get open, because teams have been playing him straight up, but you can't do that if he's got a little pep in his step, you know. And I think, I don't know, they'd be my, whoever wins that game, I think will win the Super Bowl. And I think the Chiefs will win. But, you know, as our friend Moshe Kanefogel likes to make fun of us for, I'll hedge and we'll say, I'm not going to say the Chiefs are going to win that game and they're going to win the Super Bowl, but I think if they do, they'll get there. And the other thing I really enjoyed watching was that Lions home game.
That was the best game of the weekend.
Yeah, not just the quality of game, but the atmosphere seemed like electric. You saw the post game interviews with, you know, NFL post game interviews, like NBA post game interviews, they're just terribly boring. And you see St. Brown and Hutchinson and Goff, like the crowd's still packed, they're getting another home game. They're my pick to come out of the NFC. I think they will, but I'm just excited for people we know who are Lions fans. Like, being a Red Sox fan, I've experienced in our younger years the same kind of anguish. And
I meant to text our buddy Ben Berlin about the Lions, because 1991, I mean, that's a long time to go between playoff wins.
No, I lived with him while we were in college, and we watched every game of that 0-16 season. He broke two remotes. And like, he watches every Pistons game. I don't know how he does it. And I'm just happy for him. Like, I can empathize in a positive way just with what he's going through. And like, he'll tell you, no, they want to win next week. If they don't win next week, he'll be upset. But like, this is the best they've probably felt in so long, and I hope for the city's sake, and his sake, that it keeps going. But I'm on the band. That's my bandwagon team with the Cowboys out. So those two things. I think I wouldn't be surprised if we have a Chiefs Lions Super Bowl.
So that's, I was just about to ask you. So that's your pick. You're picking against what seems to be the overwhelming favorites.
Well, I will pick if I'm making. Taking a gambling pick, I'd go Bills Niners. My heart wants Chiefs Lions, but if I'm making a pick to give out to people, I don't know what the odds are, but Bills Niners will be. The Niners just don't really have, like, they'll play, let's assume they play Green Bay and Detroit. Like, theirs are just, Detroit's a great matchup for the Niners. Green Bay is a little bit more sneaky, because they can control the ball on the ground a little better than Detroit might be able to at this stage, with Aaron Jones playing like he has been. But I think we'll see Bills. I think if I'm gambling, I'd probably put a little money on Bills Niners.
That was my pick before the playoffs started. We'll let you go on this one. You're a Celtics fan, which makes you hated by a lot of people, considering you got a mix Red Sox, Celtics, Cowboys. Like, it's a mixed bag with you, but
I'm pure evil.
you're pure evil, and it, you know, obviously we're tight, but if we weren't, I would be like, you know, who the fuck is this guy? Let me ask you this. Your Celtics, quick take on them, obviously top team in the East. If there was one flaw, what would it be? And considering I'm going to be doing a show about NBA All-Star selections, and it's highly contested, there's only 12 spots, the Celtics are going to get two guys. if you had to give a second All-Star nod, who's it going to be?
So Celtics look great. Like, I can't, there's not really many superlatives to use. They can use a backup guard who's a little bigger. Drew Holiday has been good, not great. And as much as I like watching Pritchard play, he'll be hunted in the playoffs. So some kind of a backup wing or guard who, I know it's funny to say, because I think, also think, I've heard Bill Simmons say this, but like, it's a wing or guard who can play defense and hit an open shot. But that's what everyone wants. You know, that's like,
yeah, I was going to say, like, oh, so they're unique in this, right?
We'll say that. Right. But the thing, I think actually, if they don't add anybody, they'd be fine. The New Yorker basketball in me wants them to add another backup big guy, like an Isaiah Stewart or something, because you know Porzingis will get hurt when it matters. So I don't think it hurts to kind of add another guy like that. And then they can take the money if Porzingis, they could eat the money if Porzingis is healthy, then Stewart could sit on the bench. Like, it's fine with me. So yeah, I would like to see them get another bigger guard, just to be kind of the eighth man on the rotation. But realistically, I mean, Jalen looks so much better going to his left this year. He still has some hiccups, but like, there are moments where you're like, oh, he clearly got the message and worked on this offseason. So in terms of second All-Star, I mean, that's tough. That's a really, if they're only getting two, my heart wants to say Derek White, just because he's probably been their second best overall player in terms of offense, defense, ball movement, continuity. Like, he does so many things so well, and he's so versatile. But then you also, Jalen's had nights where he's just on fire and he keeps them in games with Tatum's kind of slow playing it. I think I'd have to give it to Porzingis, though. I think the difference...
That's my pick also. If he gets the requisite minutes played, that's my pick. Yeah, I think he's been the second best Celtic.
It's just watching them year in. I've watched a lot of Celtics games. I've made my poor wife watch a lot of Celtics games for a long time. I've had the pleasure of watching some Celtics playoff games, like, from the floor. And it's easy to see kind of what their issue was in the past years, is that they did both sides of the ball. They were just lacking a big guy who could control the paint on both sides, but also could kind of hit an open shot. Horford did that at times, but his consistency, you know, he's kind of like me. Like, he can't, like, we can't jump. He never was able to jump, but he can't jump now. And Porzingis is just a wall on defense. And you can get him in trouble in space if on a pick and roll, but like, he's really he's just so tremendous. The teams go to the hoop totally differently against them while he's in the game. And then on offense, he gets the ball in the high post. He just shoots over whoever's guarding him, takes threes, like, whether they're open or not so open, sure. And he's trying to go to the basket as much as he can. He's, you know, he still gets bumped around a little bit, but he's been so good. He's been much better than advertised. We've seen him. I know you loved him on the Knicks at a certain point. We watched him in Dallas and Washington, and he's close to what – you got to give credit to Phil Jackson. He knew what he was doing, man. They should never have fired him.
If I had to pick a second Celtic, he'd be my second All-Star. I also think the front court is a little bit less deep in the East than it is in the West, and anything to keep Julius Randle off the All-Star team, because I think Bam Adebayo is going to get the backup center spot. But if you need another front court player, Porzingis over Randle any day of the week. But my biggest concern about the Celtics, if I was a Celtics fan, is just the late game offensive execution. And a lot of that has to do with Jason Tatum in terms of him growing as a player, because we've seen it, you know, for the last couple of years now. Like, he's on the precipice of being in that upper echelon of guy. But there's just something missing where it's just like, he'll take like a bad contested three when he's just settling, and you know it when you see it. And that to me is the big thing that can derail the Celtics.
Yeah, I mean, Tatum tends to get a little bit better every year in those end of game situations. He's still not great, but also if they have options. You know, now Porzingis opens up the floor a little more. You know, so hopefully we won't see some of those contested threes. Hopefully, Joe Mazzulla will call timeouts. That's something that would, you know, be much appreciated. I think every Celtic fan is dying for a little bit more of that. And I mean, yeah, then the, just that five at the end of the game, if they're going Tatum, Brown, White, Porzingis, and then really if it's, I mean, Drew will be left open or Horford will be left open. Or, you know, you could throw Hauser in there if it's really a last, you know, last possession of a game. There's just a lot of space. So Tatum will have, he'll have his shots. He'll have plenty of opportunities come April and May to change his early legacy. But I still have faith in him. He's not Dak Prescott to me yet.
Yeah, and he's closer to that top tier than Dak is to his top tier. Last thing I'll let you go. Obviously, Missoula, first year last year, it had its ups and downs. Where are you at with Missoula now? Are you a little bit more impressed? Are you still nervous?
I'm still nervous. He has much better assistance this year, I think, with a couple of the guys they brought in, Charles Lee, being kind of the most, you know, trendy guy who will maybe become probably become a head coach one day. So he's got more advisement kind of in his ear. That's not Marcus Smart just screaming at him. So hopefully we'll see a bit of a change. Also, I mean, you look at, like you said, the East front court is a little shallow. By the way, if anyone's going to keep Julius Randle off the All-Star team, it'll be Julius Randle. So you have nothing to worry about there. But like they said, they get to the playoffs. Who are they playing? They'll play Philadelphia, who's fine. They're a good team. And they'll play Milwaukee, who they seem to have, outside of the last game they played, they've generally handled Milwaukee one last year or two. So barring injuries, I think the only thing that would really keep them from getting there is themselves. Milwaukee or Philadelphia can definitely beat them, but Boston should be the favorite in all those series, assuming they have their full complement of players. So Mazzullo has better voices in his ear, but it's a matter of will he listen to them or not. So far, you could see it, with the exception of the timeouts at the end of the games, he generally a lot of good out-of-bounds plays, a lot of good kind of defensive switches and rotations that they necessarily didn't do last year. And the players seem hungry. They understand what it means to be the one seed. They want to win 65 games. Like, it's not just a team that's going to be like, you know, kind of pull, you know, not put their foot on the gas. They'll have some nights where they keep it, you know, Tatum and Brown shuffle nights out, Porzingis sits a little bit. But for the most part, when you have Derek White on your team, you can't stop. No one's going to stop playing hard. You're going to be playing hard for the full 48 minutes. And he kind of exemplifies that. And I think I see more of that this year with them. So I'm still in on Mazzullo. It's hard to be out because he's still, you know, so fresh from the job. But he could blow it in the playoffs. I don't think they will. I think they'll get to the final. So
what's the last thing? Go ahead.
No, I'm not worried about him. I think we won't know until the playoffs. If he kind of choke jobs it there, they might be, you know, Charles Lee might be getting a promotion.
Let me ask you this. Last question, then I'll let you go. You've been great with the time, all that good stuff. The one team in the East that scares you the most, who is it?
I mean, it's Milwaukee. I mean, they have Giannis and Damian Lillard. How are you not scared? You know, it's two guys who could go for 35 points, 10 assists in a game. You know, their supporting cast is not so scary. Middleton has taken a step back overall. But they would scare me. With Porzingis and Horford, I think, obviously, you don't shut down Embiid, but they can handle a lot of what Philadelphia wants to do on the court. And Philadelphia, I don't think you really guard them. I don't think they can guard. They have no one to really guard Tatum or Jaylen. Like, yeah, Nick Batum, great. More Milwaukee. I'm a little afraid of the Knicks because with OG, they can kind of at least try to take one of Tatum or Brown out of the game, or at least make them press. But again, Knicks, much like our Cowboys discussion, I got to see it. I got to see the Knicks get, you know, win a huge playoff series and like get to a conference title game. So is it this year? Probably not, but I'm hoping for all you crazy Knicks fans it is, because I make more money when they do, having Knicks tickets I just sell to crazy New York fans.
For me, I know this may sound a little crazy. I think it's the Miami Heat again.
It could be. I mean, it's not a bad example. I think their time may be, I don't know. I mean, Jimmy's a great player, but I don't know if they have enough offense to stick with the Celtics. I don't know. I mean, they always kind of keep it like somewhat above 500 and pretty much like top 13 ranks across the league and key stats on team stats. And they turn something up in the playoffs, but I'm not worried about them this year. Because those could be famous last words. Like, we can be coming back to this in May, but they might not even have to play them. Mine's got to figure out the regular season seeding, so we'll see.
It's going to be interesting. I think the top of the East, the top five teams in the East are really interesting. I mean, Milwaukee's got to get their defensive rotations, the defensive, you know, game plan scheme down pat. But I think, you know, they're almost like interchangeable. And Miami, I'll never count out Miami. I know I hate Pat Riley, but I respect the hell out of him. He's the best mover and shaker in NBA history. Like, that guy just, they always do it. And Spoelstra's the best. And so if I was a Celtics fan, I mean, as a Knicks fan, I'm really scared of the Heat, more so than any other team.
Yeah, because the Knicks are probably scared of every team because it's just kind of.
Yeah, I mean, we're punching above our weight at that point, right? I don't care what the standings say. We're punching above our weight. But if I were you, I would still very much fear the Miami Heat. But no, anyway, we'll see how it shakes out.
Yeah, it should be a good second half of the season. I can't believe we're halfway there.
I know. It's really crazy. It's really, really crazy.
Where's time go, man?
Time needs to chill the hell out. Phil, this is great. Thanks so much for doing it. We'll obviously kibitz about all things fantasy football, and we're wishing our guy Ben Berlin luck next week. I think the Lions are going to do it. I like the -6. Well,
you're in for next year, right? I don't have to like ask you in August if you're in. You can come in right now.
I guess so, because I'm a masochist. On that note, I'll speak to you later, buddy. Have a good one.
We have it on tape. Okay. Bye.
Later, bye. So I know it's been over a week since my guy over here tasted victory for the first time in his sports fandom life, but I had to bring him on to gloat a little bit. None other than Michigan man himself, not David Portnoy, I wish, but full center for Jordan Marks. Jordan, have you come off the high yet?
Absolutely not. I have not come off the high. I'm walking on clouds. I'm going to walk on clouds every single day for the rest of this entire year until there's a new national champion crowned. Hopefully that's us again.
So you texted me offline and you were just like, I was talking to my brother. I've been a loser my entire life because you're a Mets fan. You're an Islanders fan. You're a Jets fan. You're a Knicks fan. Michigan football, because that's your alma mater. You got one. You got one. So do you feel like you're off the schneid of Loserville? Like, or do you still feel, because of the professional sports teams that you root for, that you have that, you know, kicked in the nads mentality still?
I feel like I'm off the schneid for sure. I mean, we're not going to talk about those other sports right this second, but those have different inherent problems. There's ownership things, and it's just a totally different story. This is a program that should be here. The story should be that Michigan should be a national champion contender, right? This is the winningest program in the history of college football. There are
they did count a couple of wins against high school programs back in the day to beef up their stats, but whatever, it doesn't matter.
Whatever you say. This is definitely one of the most prominent programs in the country, and it should be here. And just ever since my fanhood started, it's been cursed and terrible. And to be honest, like during COVID, when we had a 2-win season, I truly never thought we'd get here ever. And it just completely turned around, and we did it the right way through recruiting, through development. And they really tried to give
stealing us signals.
What?
Stealing signs.
And they tried.
I'm just busting your balls.
I know. And they tried to give us all that type of garbage this year. And you know, it came full circle, and You know, we beat the SEC. We beat the, you know, three of the five best defenses in the country in the Big Ten. And then we beat the best offense in the country in undefeated Washington and Michael Penix. So it's an amazing story, and it feels so damn beautiful.
You were lucky enough to be there. What was the environment like? I mean, the game unfolded where, even though it was like a one possession game for a bit, it never really felt like they were in doubt. Like, what was the vibe like in the building? And were you ever nervous throughout that game that it wasn't going to go your way?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start with pregame, because, you know, before the Rose Bowl, I was, you know, pretty nervous to play Alabama. I mean, you're talking about five stars at pretty much every position group, and you're playing against a team that, like, you know, has either equal or greater talent level at every position. I was definitely pretty nervous against that. And then against Washington, I was like, yeah, Michael Penix is really good. He played an amazing game against Texas where he made every single throw. His receivers are really good. But he's going to have to play that exact same perfect game again. But this time he's going against a significantly better defense. So pregame, I felt a little better. But yeah, as the game started, I mean, the second play of the game, Donovan Edwards breaks out for a 60-yard run. So, I mean, I'm so happy immediately. I'm like, we're going to be able to run the ball on this team. And once I knew that we were going to be able to run the ball on this team, I felt pretty good. It was awesome. I mean, it was 80% Michigan, I want to say, in the stadium. It was so loud. But I'm happy you said that you thought when you were watching that it was Michigan had it, because obviously there was that second and third quarters that I personally was like, are we really going to give this away? But at the same time, I was like, they can't really stop the run. We're getting to Michael Penix, even though we're not bringing him down. We're making him uncomfortable enough that he's not hitting the same throws that he hit last week. He overthrew Roma Dunze on a big play. He's not making the same plays, and they couldn't run the ball at all. So I did feel good, and yeah, with every single big play, I mean, just being there, I felt it was crazy. It was crazy. So many Michigan fans around me. It was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that overthrow that you talked about, like, he wasn't making any overthrows in the game against Texas. Like, everything was like on point, like thread the needle, like you're perfect. And the Michigan front four really just beat him up. I mean, you saw him walking off the field, holding the ribs, holding everything. Like, he was just, he got knocked around. And, you know, Michigan did what Michigan's done all year. Just like, they won in the trenches, and the front four really showed up. And, you know, and credit to the secondary, because they held up at the back end as well.
100%. And I think, you know, a lot's going to be – a lot was always made about JJ and Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards. But the defense is really the story of this game for me. I mean, when you're going against a team like Washington, the defense, the way they stepped up, like you said, Mason Graham, Kenneth Grant, Chris Jenkins, like that interior line, and then all the outside pressure just – Graham McGregor, Derek Moore, Jalen Harrell, like, oh, they really got to him. It was awesome. And then Mikey Sanders still had a pick. Will Johnson had a pick. It was, like, to do that against Michael Penix, it's no one's been able, literally no one has been able to do that. So it was awesome to see, because it really shows that these are the rightful national champions, and there's no doubt about it.
How much of a cherry on top is it that you sent Nick Saban into retirement?
did I type that to you? I definitely typed that to a lot of people. I think it wasn't as surprising. You know, I mean, obviously it's always surprising when it comes up on your phone that the GOAT is retiring. It's definitely funny that Michigan ended it. You know, I thought this was going to go that way for him. The way he was kind of behaving towards this season, and just like him kind of like reminiscing in like pressers, was like weird. But it's pretty funny that Michigan ended.
Speaking of another coach, the one that Michigan employs, well, maybe won't be employing that much longer. This is it, right? Like, now it's on to the NFL. You know, checked it off. I know he's a Michigan man. He's a made man. But he's likely gone, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I with every day, it feels like there's new NFL jobs that are keep opening too. Like, I don't even know. I have to check my phone. Are the Eagles and the Cowboys jobs open now? Like if they, I mean, I don't think they actually are, but
not officially.
Yeah. So like, the more that open, it's just like, but I do think the Chargers was the one that he was always going to take if he took any. He's a California kid. So I said that in the past, and I don't know, you've asked me countless times this year, and I said, if we win the national championship, I don't care. And at the same time, I would have leaned that he would leave if we won the national championship, because I think he's so fed up with the NCAA. And I don't think it's a comp thing, because Michigan can pay him way more than the NFL can pay, will want to pay him. But at the same time, I just, I don't know. I there's something about Michigan that still draws him home. I think that he's waiting for Michigan to put this clause in that contract, some sort of immunity clause, like I said in the last time we spoke, like a four clause that if the NCAA comes down hard on him, it can't just can him and eat the buyout. So, and I don't know if they're going to do that from like a legal perspective, because I just don't think they would. But I think that's what's holding up the contract extension, and definitely imploring him to keep interviewing. It looks like he met with the Falcons today, so we'll see.
Would you welcome him to your New York Jets?
He would be a big bozo to do that.
No.
I said he would be a big bozo to do that. What is he going to do?
Right.
He really wants to Zach Wilson?
Nah, no, I'm not sure about that. But the answer would probably be yes. You welcome him in a heartbeat to the New York Jets. But it doesn't look like the Jets are moving on from Robert Saleh. All right, so now that you got this one and you're on cloud nine, your other sports teams, it's tough sledding right now. If you had to pick one that was going to win next, we'll let you go on this. Who would you pick?
One that would just win it all? That I personally would – personally, I think like the Mets winning the World Series would be unbelievable. I think it would be so cool. I just, you know, like the Jets, it's never going to happen in my opinion. The Knicks would be so cool. Like, well, you are my friend, so it would be very cool for you too.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I don't see it happening anytime soon. But yeah, that would be nice in theory.
It seems like they're closest, but no, I do think the Mets, because I think Mets fans are similar in that they're like, I don't want to say little brother, but they're just losers who've been punched in the face so many times over that getting one would be a vindication, something like that. So let's call it.
All right, well, we'll let you go, because, you know, I don't want to bring you down with the prospect of you know,
a Mets World Series, don't worry.
Their teams. But I just wanted to give you a platform to gloat a little bit. You know, tell Ohio State that, you know, it's they're in for a rough decade. You know, ask them the glory.
Yeah, I mean, Ohio State. I don't know how many Ohio State fans you have, but it's now been 1,508 days since the Ohio State Buckeyes have beaten the Michigan Wolverines. So that counter is going to keep on going up. And, we'll keep going.
Oh, okay. Well, one last thing. How do you feel about your Michigan basketball team?
Pass.
Pass.
I think he's done. I think he's done at the end of the season. I think we're going to finish either last or second to last in the Big Ten. I think between the off-court stuff, like him, like just having this, like he's just has this like heatedness to him, and he gets And he does that and doesn't back it up with wins. And what he's done with, like, you know, I mean, you got two lottery picks and an All-American last year in Hunter Dickinson, and he didn't make the tournament. That's crazy. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's not great.
And now they're not looking good, and it does not look like they're going to make the field again. And how many years in a row can you exist as a high D1 college basketball coach and not make the tournament? So,
but that's your guy. That's your homegrown guy. But
that's why they
don't worry about any of that right now, because you're basking in the glow. So who cares?
It doesn't matter. Me and my friends call basketball the sacrificial lamb. Something had to go in order for us this to happen. So we'll gladly take it.
Understood. Well, anyway, thanks for coming on quickly. I know it was last minute, but I wanted to give you a little time to just, you know, celebrate, gloat, and always a pleasure, but we'll speak soon.
Thank you for allowing me to smoke a virtual cigar.
There you go. Absolutely. Anytime, speak.
All right. Take care.
Thanks again to recurring guest Phil Bouse, who hadn't been on in a while, but he came back on. He's a good sport to vent about his Dallas Cowboys, a little therapy session for him, among other things that we spoke about. And thanks to recurring guest Jordan Marks for coming on, giving him a chance to gloat about his Michigan Wolverines. So it was good to hear from him. That's episode 239 for the love of the game. Take us out, Pop. You tried everything. Every little thing.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.